Balancing your yin and yang energies can shift mental, physical, and emotional patterns that would otherwise lead to accelerated aging, illness, and disease. The microcosmic and macrocosmic orbit meditations help circulate energy through the primary source channels of yin and yang, known as the Du and Ren meridians, to bring greater clarity and vitality throughout your life. For a limited time, you can purchase my one-of-a-kind guided introduction to both of these Taoist meditations for just $36. Visit our online store at acenterfornaturalhealing.com/shop to begin your transformation through the microcosmic and macrocosmic orbit meditations. That's acenterfornaturalhealing.com/shop. Before we get into this episode of the Natural Healing Podcast, I wanted to first of all welcome you and also to let you know that if you haven't had the chance to listen to episodes 20 and 21, What is Qi with Ann Cecil Sturman, that was a two-part series, two of our most popular episodes, make sure that you take some time either before this episode or after to listen to those profound episodes. You'll get so many insights and just learn even more from this bright and beautiful and brilliant soul, Ann Cecil Sturman. And today we're really delighted to have her back on the show for another two-parter on the power of intention and how we can use intention to transform our lives and also, if you're working as a practitioner, to heal your patients. So Ann is going to go pretty deep into this topic, but you'll really start to see how COVID is really a spark, an impetus for all of us this time during this pandemic to make changes, to kind of shift and pivot into different directions in our lives. And you'll hear about how Ann has done this in her profession, in the work that she does. And also, you're going to get some amazing advice on why and how we need to raise our consciousness and how to shift our consciousness to start having more courage and start questioning what we have been taught to be true. I think you'll be really excited to listen to this episode. I hope you enjoy it. And don't forget to let us know in the comments at the very end exactly what you thought. Enjoy. So one of our favorite people is back on the show today. You listened to Anne if you heard the episodes number 20 and 21, where we talked about what is Qi with Ann Cecil Sturman, and we're so delighted to welcome her back today. Great to see you, Ann.
Hi, Sal. Hi, Sarah.
So as an introduction, for those of you who have not listened to those episodes or who are new to Ann's work, Ann Cecil Sturman is the author of three major books, including Advanced Acupuncture, a Clinic Manual, acclaimed as the first and only text with complete protocols for all the channels of acupuncture, a book used often as the sole basis for several online courses presented by many teachers around the world. Ann works to return acupuncture to its inspiring classical roots, not just to the Han Dynasty writings, but even earlier. She teaches in three continents and offers a twice-monthly online chat where practitioners, new and established, present cases and ask any level of question. She graduated from and then taught for 6 years at the acupuncture school founded by Dr. Jeffrey Yuen in New York. During and after her time there for over 20 years, she received thousands of hours of direct transmissions from him in acupuncture, pulse diagnosis, history, food, herbs, essential oils, stones, qigong, and philosophy. In her busy Manhattan practice, which she loves, she specializes in seemingly intractable conditions. Welcome, Ann, and thank you so much for taking the time with us.
Oh, thank you so much.
Welcome to the Natural Healing Podcast, the show designed to guide, inspire, and empower you to elevate your health so you can achieve your goals and dreams. We are your hosts, Dr. Setar Emoafi
and Salvador Cefalu,
a husband and wife team of acupuncturists and owners of a Center for Natural Healing, an integrative wellness clinic based in the heart of Silicon Valley.
We're here to make the ancient wisdom of healing practical and accessible for your modern lifestyle. What's inspiring you these days?
What's inspiring me these days is the idea that the channels can be treated with no needles, and that the mind is causing all illness, and that I think there's a way for the entire world to experience the wonders of acupuncture somehow.
What's at the forefront for you today?
Well, I was training myself to be relaxed in the moment, not knowing what was going to happen.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting because we inadvertently, I guess, because we're both pretty spontaneous, I think, but inadvertently, this podcast has become like that, where I've even had people email us and say, do you have questions I need to prepare for? And we're like, nope. Just show up and be you, because I think that's where you get the most authentic expression, is where you just show up and see what the moment has to share. I mean, it's always good to have a theme or an idea, but yeah.
Yeah, because what you're saying is when you listen to someone who's prepared their answers, they might as well just be reading.
Yeah.
Might as well just be reading a script. But I crossed a line in September. Just last month. So I spent most of July in London, and I had the luxury of having 3 weeks there, staying in Primrose Hill. And the reason I was there in the first place was that my daughter was admitted to a program in Cambridge, at Cambridge University, where she's very interested in law, and they have a summer camp there where you can go for 16 days and study international law and do debate and all that stuff.
Oh, cool.
And because she's 15, I thought, well, yeah, I couldn't just sort of drop her off or send her over by herself and then, you know, go back. So I actually took the 3 weeks and did a lot of thinking, but a lot of research for the class, a lot of reading and thinking about the low class that I was teaching in London. And then the next month, I went to Australia and I was doing a lot of thinking about the divergent class that I was teaching in Melbourne. And then something happened after I was in Australia, and I started teaching in a different way. And then when I went to teach another class in New Mexico a couple of weeks ago in Albuquerque, and Andrew taught one day of that 3-day class, and we got in a cab to go to the airport, and I'm sitting in the back seat with Andrew, and I said, I have this terrible feeling that I forgot something. And I said, so we went through all the things, you know, passport, card, phone, wallet, keys, and clothes to teach in, and toothbrush. I mean, what else can you need? And pajamas. I usually forget my pajamas. And even the pajamas were there. And I said, but look at this bag. It doesn't weigh anything. And he said, well, that's because you don't have your teaching notes in there. And I thought, oh my goodness, that's absolutely right. I didn't even think about it. And it was the first time I've left town to teach a class, or left home to teach a class, without intentionally unprepared.
Yeah, without your resources.
Yes, but I did it on purpose, because it's like you're saying to people, no, don't prepare your answers. And for a long time I thought, well, I can't, you know, because Andrew would always make fun of me, like, because it would, teaching any weekend class would take a month. It's not that I have to learn new stuff. I want to think about it in a new way. You know, I want to see, well, what new angle can I put on this time? And so it was a luxury to be, I have to say, courageous enough to trust that the new angle would come, or would just come, that you would just turn up and it would naturally emerge in a way, I guess I would best explain as, you know, a request to the divine to say, well, how can I be of maximum service on this particular weekend to these particular people? And it turned out to be, I think, the best class I've ever taught. Wow. In fact, it was a class, I've never seen so many miracles emerge through acupuncture in one weekend. It was just one after the other, beautiful healings. Wow. So that's what's inspiring me at the moment, is to get out of one's head and to say, you know, you've been studying this stuff for 20 years now, you've had thousands of hours in the same room as Jeffrey. Really, it's time to take it off on your unique tangent, whatever that is. And you can't find out what that is unless you drop the reins.
Yes.
So
it's really fascinating, because it's reminding me, in my limited experience, when I learned this when I was first teaching yoga, and of course that's different because it's movement, but I would prepare my classes, because that's how we were taught to teach, is prepare your class and then show up and teach this sequence or teach this way. And over time, what I found is I would hardly teach what I would prepare anyway, because you have to look at the people who are there with you. And so I started just letting it just organically. And I think the same thing with teaching anything that you already know, because this medicine is in you. It's not something that you have to, you've cultivated it for so many years. So just showing up and being able to trust what comes through you in that moment from all the knowledge and all of the experience that you've gathered for all these years, that's really profound. I'm sure that that was an amazing class.
It was very liberating, and I don't think I'll ever take notes anywhere again.
Cool. But
I'm not taking it. It's not, I had the same experience with you. I've been carrying notes around for decades. Sometimes it will be, I remember the first time I went to Albuquerque, I had a couple of dozen pages, and then it got down to like half a dozen, and then 3 pages. And then lately I've been carrying around 1 page. But even that is sufficient structure to be able to limit. Mm-hmm. But you're right, it should be in the moment, and it should be, the thing is, it's natural. Mm-hmm. It's an inherently natural medicine. And I'm gradually stopping calling it acupuncture even. And now I'm thinking about it as being treatment or meditations on the channels. Because when you say acupuncture, people immediately think needles. And
yeah, they have an aversion.
Well, yes, they have an aversion, because everyone has an opinion of needles. Nearly everyone has an opinion. Yeah, oh, I don't like needles, or I don't mind needles. It's not, no one ever says they love them. A lot of people have terrible traumas, you know, from big, fat, thick needles going into them when they're very young. They're still holding that thought.
Well, it seems like you've been sharing the wonders of acupuncture without needles. And it would be nice to delve into that some.
To think of acupuncture as being a function of needles, or needles being a function of acupuncture, whatever is more correct there, is to make acupuncture material. And what we need to do is move away from thinking in a materialist nature, which is really the reason that we see so many closures of acupuncture schools at the moment. You know, Southwest Acupuncture College in Santa Fe being another one closing.
Oh, did they? Wow.
Yeah, ACTCM here in San Francisco just closed also.
I think that was one of the first
in the entire state, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. When I went to acupuncture school a long time ago, there were 3 schools in New York, and then within 10 years, there were half a dozen or 7 in New York. And now it's back to, I think it's down to 2 now. And it has to be raised. The issue has to be raised. Why? Why is it that we're seeing a demise in acupuncture education? And I think the number one reason is the trend to this heavy, heavy trend to materialism and considering acupuncture as being measurable, as being, you know, you need needles to practice acupuncture, and you need to think about things in a certain way and how many needles and which way you turn them. And then that's the first thing. And then the next thing is the schools are teaching the students that acupuncture is insufficient. Mm-hmm. It can't do this and it can't do that. And here's the World Health Organization approved list of things that it can treat. Mm-hmm. And that you walk in the door of an acupuncture school and immediately it's limited, and immediately you're told, you know, that you can't serve a patient unless you've given them a piece of paper that says that they must consult a physician. And, you know, for anything that you do, even if it's a sprained ankle. And so the patient is led down, the patient is already told that it is a very limited way of approaching something.
It's absurd here in California in terms of having insurance reimburse treatment. Some companies are basing the list of conditions they reimburse based on the California workers' compensation, you know, rules, or, you know, what they have mm-hmm. decided acupuncture is useful for. And so they look at acupuncture being effective for low back pain, but not for neck pain. Mm-hmm. Cervical pain. So,
because the spine is all separate.
Yeah, like
so how does that make
nothing to do with each other?
How that makes any sense is beyond me to a layperson or a medical
person. It's
like
Mr. Potato Head.
Yeah, right. Here, I'm just going to treat this arm and separate it from your body.
Yeah, it's nonsense.
You remember me? You guys, you're too young. You're too young for Mr. Potato Head.
No, I remember Mr. Potato Head.
You had to stick the body on and stick the neck on and stick the legs on. And that's how they think about diagnosis.
Well, and think about it, Anne. That's kind of how we're taught acupuncture too in school. I mean, that's the problem, I think, with TCM, is that you're taught very formulaically and very non-holistically. So it's like, oh, this point treats this symptom. It's like, where's the body in all of this?
Yeah, that's another problem with colleges throughout the United States. They're focusing on TCM acupuncture, you know, traditional Chinese
point
medicine,
by point.
Which, as you know, is standardized in China, but it's really a westernized form of acupuncture where they tried to make it seem like it was scientifically based. And that's based on point action, you know, like what does this point do? Versus what does the channel do, you know, a channel approach, which is a more classical approach that you've become well known for teaching throughout the world. And that TCM is known to be very limited in its effectiveness. And that's why in China, they look at it really just as pain management.
And then they do studies on it to prove the limited view. Mm-hmm. And then the studies have to be peer reviewed. Peer means a person like me who's thinking in a similarly limited way. Mm-hmm. How can it ever, ever expand to its natural capacity if it's being limited at every turn?
Right.
That's such a reflection of how we are as a society, though. We're so limited in our views. So, of course, we're going to be practicing this type of acupuncture that's limited in its abilities, because we don't believe that there are miracles. We don't believe in endless possibilities. And so we're going to gravitate towards systems that constantly prove that that's the case. It's like, you know, trying to prove your belief system over and over again to keep, you know, to give yourself an excuse for keeping yourself limited.
Yeah, it's like maximum shrinkage, like in a tornado of shrinkage. And, you know, the greatest enemy to broad thinking and expansion of consciousness, I should say, is facts. Once you have a fact, nothing else is true. The opposite has to be false. So,
right. And the fact is only fact until it's proven to not be a fact.
Exactly.
Which usually takes about 10 years.
Yes. Yes. But then you have to raise courage. One must raise one's courage to establish that that isn't a fact, because there is decreasing encouragement to question what is true, what is considered true. So in our profession, we really must, I think, help consciousness expand and not agree that it should be shrinking in this way. And the way to do that is not to protest, but just to build something much, much bigger and stronger alongside it.
Yeah, I mean, you have to show people another way so they could see or think outside the box, because you can't, if you get stuck in that box, I mean, there's no way out. You have to give them a view of something else.
But you have to start by changing the way you think first. Right?
Yes.
Because if our responsibility, I think, as practitioners is to work on our mindset and then be able to transmit that to our patients and anybody that we influence. Because if we go out there trying to do, you know, being very Yang Chiao Mai, going out and telling everybody what to believe, it's not going to work. We
totally
have to cultivate
completely,
it and then transmit it.
I completely agree. And fortunately, the natural tendency of humans is to seek expansion of consciousness. So it should be easier for us to help with expansion than it is for them to shrink it. And so I like what you said about, you know, cultivating ourselves and then helping transmit that to patients. I take a slightly different view. I think that our number one responsibility is to cultivate ourselves, yes. But then I see it as standing alongside the patient and watching them expand so far beyond what you imagined was possible that it's like it transmits back to you. Mm-hmm. As practitioner, they end up teaching you, and then whoa, and then it feeds back and forth and back and forth, and it's like a spiral of continually opening consciousness, which is what I felt in Albuquerque. You know, I'm there treating people with high expectation, very high expectation, and then watching what happened on the table over and over again exceed my expectations, and it was just so beautiful. But that's the nature of acupuncture. So as acupuncturists, we have the tool that we need to get this expansion happening. I'm using that word too many times, but that is what's on my mind at the moment.
You know, our teacher Jeffrey Yuen often talks about being the mystic, and in that regard he wants us to explore for ourselves, you know, different methodologies or different ways to work with the healing modalities that we are trained in. And so one of the practices that I do is called Japanese Meridian Therapy. And it's a beautiful system. And the way that I was taught is using these large gold and silver needles. And you were making me think about it because you were referencing not using, you know, needles, you know, inserted into the body. And so these needles are just touched on the points. And since they're gold and silver, what we're trained is that there is a resonance with the level of Jing, you know, so Jing being the deepest level of energy that makes up our physical body. And so you could say it's dealing with more serious constitutional levels, even things that deal with hereditary patterns and such. And that's why, as you know, we tap into them through these special channels called the 8 Extraordinary Meridians. And so I bring this up because I recently, and this is an acute aggravation that I recently had of a problem that's been lingering. And basically it showed up as a acute or an exacerbated plantar fasciitis that I've had this week. And so after I was running with my dog and just running in the field, but still just kind of pounding my feet, that afternoon, after I got up from sitting for about an hour, I was just limping and just literally couldn't put pressure on my heel. And I tried to treat it myself, and even Satara worked on it that evening. The next morning, and I have to go to work, and I can't put pressure on my foot. And so I said, "Honey, you got to do something. You know, we got to get this better, and we got to do it right away." And so she does an assessment. She says, "Well, you have yin chao mai, you know, which requires some deep needling, and for me to lie down for 20 to 40 minutes." I said, "Honey, I don't have time. Do the gold and silver needles on the points." And so she proceeded to use the gold and silver needles. And as you know, for the treatment, my pain is in my left heel. She uses the gold and silver along the points, coupling, you know, two points at a time. Until the end, she's connecting the terminal point and the opening point, kidney six with bladder one. And after that, I got up and I was just walking, you know, let's say 70, 75% better. And, you know, it's still sore, but it hasn't flared up, you know, nothing to that extent, you know. So it immediately just like opened the system up, all just with touching the points with the gold and silver. I think we could just probably do that with our fingertips, to be honest with you.
Well, and Anne, you're doing a lot of remote healing where you're doing it just psychically now, right?
And now, yeah, we could talk about how you've been working with patients remotely, you know, visualizing the points. And you want to talk about that a little bit for us?
Sure. Well, what you're talking about is Satara's incredible intention, right?
Right.
It's powerful. The use, right. It's very, very powerful. And that is the cornerstone of our practice. And you could use bits of straw or nothing at all. Or the remote practice. I mean, I don't know if I said to you last time, but there are several patients who at the end of the lockdown period declined to return to the office because they said that their remote treatments were far more powerful than the ones that they had received in the office.
Hmm. Do you want to tell our audience about how you do that?
Oh, sure. Yes. I do think that this is where the profession is going. And I think that this is one of the reasons that the schools are closing, that it's not that acupuncture is becoming less important, but that acupuncture is going in a completely different direction. And one of the catalysts for this was that lockdown period. Not to say that that's where it originated, but that's where it was forced, right? And so the remote treatments, yes, I have a consultation chat with the patient and decide what the treatment will be. And then they lie down and I like to have the camera on them, although that's not even necessary, but I think it adds to it for them if I can see them on the screen. Mm-hmm. And then let's say I am treating Yin Chao Mai, which happens to be one of my favorite channels. Not that we should have favorite channels, but I can't help it really. And then so the luxury of the remote treatment is that rather than go through the labor of needling kidney six, kidney two, kidney eight, kidney 11, stomach 12, stomach 9, stomach 4, stomach 3, stomach 1, bladder 1, gallbladder 20 if you want to add it. Instead of going through that point by point by point and connecting it up, like connecting dots into a channel, in remote treatment, you can just visualize the entire channel all in one go. And it's like, you're watching that body on the screen and then you imagine the map of that channel in that particular body and then you just turn it on with your mind like that. And then, all right, now it's lit up in this body. And how does it feel in this body? Oh, and how does it feel in this body? Is there a little, maybe you find as you focus in on that channel that there's, and your consciousness, practitioner consciousness, is in that channel, in that body. Do you feel that the energy is not flowing very well between kidney 8 and kidney 11, maybe? That's a fair distance along the channel. And if so, where is that block? Well, it's actually in the knee. All right, so we just put attention there at the knee. Imagine the energy flowing beautifully and freely through the knee. And lately, I've begun to wonder whether the chi is actually flowing from kidney 6 to bladder 1 in that example, or whether it's actually just alive and free. And I'm thinking lately that really it's just like a shimmer, like the whole world is shimmering. It's not actually moving. It's just shimmering in place. And that, so an individual channel where it's not shimmering, it will be, there'll be a dullness to it as you focus on that channel in the patient. It'll feel like it's lackluster. And that's where the actual blockage is in the channel. So, and if you to put that through a diagnostic lens, why might there be a blockage in that channel in the knee? Or maybe that person just can't raise the courage to bend their leg and move forward, or bend their leg and rest, or, you know, feel flexible in their situation. There'll be a reason. Or maybe the blockage is up right at bladder one and that person doesn't seem to be able to muster a clear view of themselves. They can't see themselves clearly. All they can see is their, what they perceive to be, limitations. And so in, from a remote position, you're focusing on the channel and then finding where it's moving slowly, where it's not moving, or where it's dull and not shimmering. And it's a very fascinating process, because in order, as you're doing that, it's inevitable that you imagine the channel in your own body. And I'm not saying that that's a part of what's necessary. It just, you know, as you're imagining it in someone else's body, you automatically, by virtue of resonance, activate it in your own body. So remote treatment, I think, has been extremely healing for me too.
The Taoists believe that anything is possible, including miracles, and that when you open your heart, you open your world to endless possibilities. My audio guide, How to Attract Endless Possibilities, will teach you the exact steps to help you create your ideal life. And it's yours free when you sign up now at setaramoafi.com/miracles. You'll learn the four pillars that'll allow you to shift your internal experience so you can begin manifesting exactly what you want. The life of your dreams is closer than you think. Visit setaramoafi.com/miracles to start creating it now. That's setaremoafi.com/miracles.
And where did you get these ideas in order to start practicing like this? Obviously, you were practicing being a mystic.
Well, I hadn't performed a remote treatment before the lockdown. And so it was probably about March 20th. And, you know, I wasn't allowed on the train to go into the city. The law didn't allow it. And, you know, a couple of weeks later, I worked out that, well, hang on a second, I am an essential worker. So then I started getting on the train. But for a couple of weeks there, maybe 3 or 4 weeks, I had to work out a way of seeing the patients who were in dire straits, because, you know, I specialize in chronic degenerative. Sure. And seeing, or what I call now seemingly insurmountable conditions. And seemingly because nothing is insurmountable. And so what was I going to do with these people who were, you know, fourth stage cancer patients with dire prognoses who needed not only the treatment but the support? And so I remembered a couple of years earlier, one of our friends, Misha, and his wife Tanya came to visit our apartment, and Misha identified my son, Ravi, as being a gifted healer. Mm. And so he went in to see Ravi, and he said, I think Ravi wasn't well at the time for some reason, and he did a hands-off treatment on Ravi's body, and Ravi immediately felt better. And he said to Ravi, you can do this too. And so I think he had like a 40-minute lesson on remote healing, and I watched the whole thing. And, well, not the whole thing. I watched some of it through the, you know, crack in the door, and I was actually very fascinated by it. And when the lockdown came, I thought, that's where I'm going to go with this. It cannot be that we can't be of help when the practice itself is shamanic. Mm-hmm. So in original acupuncture, there were no needles. Needles were invented long, long after the notion of the channels. And the channels predate all history. You know, the way I think about the channels is that they are lines of energy through all space and time that energize each human being. And so as far as we know, back to the beginning of the Shang Dynasty, which is 10,000 years BCE, there have been shamanic practices that work on these very channels that we work with. And so at the beginning of the lockdown, I saw that as being an invitation to go back to shamanism, which, you know, you have to be careful about speaking about it in public, because when the public thinks about shaman, they think about, or shamans, they think about like voodoo and voodoo type things. And
sure. Witch doctors or something like this.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you have to go down to South America and be with, you know.
Or doing some psychedelic
Yeah,
drugs.
Doing psychedelics and things like that.
Yeah. And there are tremendously gifted people that are doing this in wonderful ways. Why can't acupuncture return to its shamanic route when we are faced with the situation where we can't pick up a needle and put it in that patient's body? So that's how that came about. And I immediately started and came up with the techniques myself and made a video about it. I'm not trying to sell that video, but where at that time, the way I was practicing was exactly as you described, Cetera treating you, Sal, which was to put one needle in and then the next needle and create a connection between those two points, and then take out the first needle and put it in to become the third needle and create a connection between points two and three, and then take out needle two and make that needle four and create that next leg of connection. I was practicing like that for quite a long time. And then I had made it even fancier, where you needle the segments, like two needles at one time, and then create an infinity loop between the patient and your own channel, same channel. Create an infinity loop where you're actually driving the treatment, and practice that way for quite some time. That's a very, very powerful way. And now I've dispensed with all of that and just going with lighting up the whole channel. And recently, not just the whole channel, but also its tendril connection from the top of the head and out of kidney one, that where all the channels meet all the other channels that connect with each individual in humanity. and extend throughout all space and time. And that's the most powerful of all, I think, just going back to absolute purity of energy.
Mm-hmm.
I know you've both had this experience where a patient will come into the room and after talking to them, it's like you've already done the treatment and it's just the needles are almost like what you're supposed to do. And of course it helps support everything, but it's almost like initiating that resonance and initiating that conversation has already moved the chi through the channel that you're needing to move it through. And the healing has already happened. So I think it's true that the channels are our supplemental pathway to do the healing. And it's about just doing the healing, quite simply.
Yes.
On many occasions when I've had to help friends and family at their home, I will do much less. I'll just simplify everything. Mm-hmm. And have the most profound experiences. And I think, why do I do so much at the office?
Isn't that right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Or you've got, you know, you've got one little packet of needles in your purse. You've got five needles in your purse. And, well, I don't want to use them all because I might need them this evening where I'm going to the next place. Or, and so, yeah, what can I do with three needles? And it turns out to be more powerful than eight. Yes.
Yeah. Intention plays a huge role.
And that's why the gold and silver, I think, are so incredible because, you know, you just have these two little needles you travel everywhere with. You just disinfect each one and just keep doing and doing whatever comes up.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's beautiful. That's where it has to go, I think.
Yeah, distant healing and self-healing.
Yeah. Can you talk about how you mentioned how you feel like it's been very healing for you as well? Why is that or how is that?
Well, I think because you're absolutely focused in that channel at that time. And when you're standing over a table inserting needles, there's a lot to consider, you know, finding the point. So the point could be anywhere. It's, you know, and of course, in classical medicine, we're never, I shouldn't say never, but we are seldom needling the textbook location because the point could be, as you know, could be anywhere, wherever that flesh yields and reveals the location of the point you're needling in there. So you've got to find the point, which is, that's a job to find the point, and then finding the next point, and then making sure that the room's the right temperature and that the person's comfortable and the bolster's in the right place and keeping them focused and being careful not to engage in conversation as much as they want to talk. And then an ambulance siren goes by and, you know, all the distractions. And then you get to bladder one and, you know, it's going to, you're going to feel as though I'm too close to your eyeball, but I'm actually not. And, you know, all those things that have to be done because you're in situ. And there's really no time for that practitioner. Even if you're really focused on keeping your feet grounded as you needle into, say, gallbladder 30 or stomach 30 or wherever you are, like really focusing on anchoring your chi into the floor, even that, I find, doesn't leave you free enough to have that channel resonate in your own body. And that's why I think it's more natural actually to do it remote. Or it could be in the same room where you're actually sitting. I'm not saying that this is really workable, but theoretically you could be in the same room sitting opposite each other and the practitioner could activate the channel in the person facing them at the same time they activate it in themselves. And that would create like a double resonance, which would infinitely increase the potential of that treatment. So the answer to your question, I think, is that there's not enough attention available in office situation where you could enjoy what you can enjoy just sitting, being in a meditation with your patient remotely. But that's, I realize as I'm speaking that I'm vocalizing a limitation that probably need not be there.
Well, it's a completely different experience. You're right. And what I'm thinking about is, you know, doing remote treatments, even because I've done this with my father a few times when I felt like, you know, he's in need of care and I'm far from him, or, you know, thinking about him instead of just sitting and worrying, I've tried to do this more and more. And it's that, you know, I've worked a lot with Yin Chao Mai, actually, with him as well. And I'll try, and, you know, as soon as I notice my thought going to worry about my dad's health, I'll imagine his body and, like, as though I'm working on Yin Chao Mai, try to open it up. And so this remote healing that you're talking
that's
about.
Remote.
Yeah, exactly. So it's probably very similar to that. And that's a really interesting thing that I think we can all cultivate, because we can help people, even people who maybe don't come to us directly for treatment, who you care about, who you're close to, like your children or your spouse or your parents or friends, who, you know, maybe something opens up in them through those remote treatments as well, just through your intention.
Yes.
You know, we're getting very specific here in terms of, you know, visualizing the channel. And, you know, for a layperson, that could seem a little bit overwhelming. Mm-hmm. Like, do I have to start studying the channels now to see?
I think the idea for the layperson and for anybody who is not familiar with acupuncture, the idea is that you can do anything with your intention. So like I mentioned.
That's where I was going.
Yeah.
Is everyone can visualize themselves not well, because too many people, we focus on what's not right. Mm-hmm. And we have to learn, especially collectively, to support seeing ourselves well. And that needs to be our daily meditation. And especially like for our loved ones, you know, rather than worry about their disease, is focus on them being well. Mm-hmm. And
yes.
And that everyone's going to die. I mean, there's just no way around that. And we have to come to terms with that. And it's not our place to get hung up on like when that is. I mean, you don't want to see young people pass. That's always challenging. But we spend way too much time giving bad thoughts energy. And it's as simple as, well, as we were talking before the recording, I think today, and how our teacher Jeffrey was talking about healing the heart is as simple as bringing joy and laughter into your life and cultivating that. Mm-hmm. And the heart, as the sovereign ruler of the body, could have a great power. In fact, we've talked many times on the podcast how, classically speaking, creating miracles is described as vaporizing phlegm. And vaporizing phlegm requires mm-hmm. opening the heart. I know people often wonder, like, how do you open the heart? You have to open your heart through your emotions, expressing your emotions, letting go of your hurt emotions, right? It's a huge part, opening your chest, your lungs. You know, your lungs is about forgiveness. So that's a part that plays into this. And to be able to tap into the joy that is just inherent in all of us, and to practice having more laughter. And surround yourself with people that bring that. That's actually, we've been doing that since COVID. We've been basically removed from some of our closest friends that bring a lot of joy. And so finally, we've been getting together and laughing more. And boy, is that just like the most healing thing. In fact, in our meditation, we often focus on just bringing a smile to your face, and you could just feel everything relax. You know, that's a big part of relaxation. Yeah. Just put a smile on your face.
It's like biofeedback in reverse, isn't it?
It's biofeedback. And that's biofeedback is a key thing here.
It's important to remind people to watch where your mind goes, because that's where chi flows. And where chi flows is what's going to create movement and momentum for whatever it is that you're manifesting in your life. That's why we say thoughts are things. So if your mind is running down this path of negativity about illness, about what could go wrong, about what is wrong, well, you're just perpetuating that. So just watch your mind and create the shift. And that's doing healing on yourself.
In your self-talk, how many times do you have a patient come in and say, well, my bad knee is my right one? oh, so your good one's on your left. Okay, and you have your bad one on your right. It's like, you know, that's just...
But the practitioner then writes it down on a piece of paper to make it realer.
Bad knee, right side.
Like, it's more real now. It's written down. It's official that your left knee is bad, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And those agree so much, Cetera, about the watching your mind and really being aware of what thoughts the patient is attaching to.
You know, it's like my heel, you know. I can look at my heel, like my left heel is my bad heel. And I've been looking at my heel as like my left heel is the one that's been sore as my messenger. It's like, why is it talking to me? Why am I feeling handicapped in my life? Because it's a metaphor for something bigger. Why do I feel I'm not moving forward gracefully in my life? You know,
right. What's the message?
These pains have messages. We have to look within ourselves. As we do that, that it's going to go away when we have a resolution.
It always does. Yeah.
Internally. And just like a cut,
right?
You wake up one day, you never have it again. You forgot you even had the problem. That's often the case.
Right. Because the body is the vehicle of the unconscious mind. So the body's job is to deliver back to you a reflection of what you're believing.
Yeah.
What you're believing. That's what it's supposed to do. And then you.
On a subconscious level, we're not aware of this.
Right. So you look at your heel and it's on the left side. And, you know, if you put that through an acupuncture lens and you feel, oh, well, okay, so this is a yin chao mai problem. I know we're not just talking to acupuncturists here, are we? But, you know, it's a yin chao mai problem. Well, and it's on my left side, which is where as a male I would be expecting this channel to resonate. So how am I hobbling myself? So you've got to get that book out.
Yep, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, I've definitely felt handicapped in moving forward with writing. And isn't it funny how this shows up?
Of course. It's amazing how it shows up. It's beautiful how the body reflects that, because if we look at it as that messenger, then we always know that it gives us feedback. And if we just listen to that feedback, then we don't have to make it worse and you know, manifest some disease.
And then instead of just feeling sorry for myself and my bad left heel, I could laugh and say, oh, isn't this interesting?
Maybe I should write more.
Maybe I shouldn't judge myself so harshly.
And thank you for showing me.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Yeah, and honor it. Honor that process. Like, thank you for waking me up, you know?
Yeah, so this is a good cue for people who are listening at home. You know, where are you uncomfortable in your body? And what could that mean for you?
What's the message?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, the number of times, but people know. Once you bring it to their attention, they can instantly tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I think we're more in touch, or people are more in touch with their bodies than they admit sometimes.
Yes. But the mindset of the culture is that the body is liable to be faulty. It's likely to be faulty. It can be faulty at any moment. And but perhaps the biggest example of that is fevers. The whole culture, with a few exceptions, our profession included, the whole culture really thinks that fevers are, they are immediately to be bopped on the head with some Tylenol or something like that.
Yeah, right.
Really, you think your body is that dumb that it would make a monumental mistake like that? Mm-hmm. It's really astonishing how the prevailing view of the body is that it's, you know, it's inevitable that it's going to be faulty. You know, it's inevitable.
But especially as you get older, that's the mindset too. Well, is that as you age, your body's going to fall apart. So you have to take measures, you know, to do less, to not this, to, you know.
There's so much that can come to you from a state of joyousness. And if joyousness is too strong a word, then from a state where there's a lack of overthinking. So, you know, in a state of joy, where there's this lightness of being and some laughter, the mind is loose enough to be able to receive inspiration and, you know, new ideas and to create pictures of what it might like to create. It's just such a different place to be.
Yeah. To be silly is there's a lot of spontaneity in that.
And that's all about the heart. So when you're that way, it's, you know, the heart is the seat of your creativity. And if you're not joyful and you're too serious about everything and you don't play, you take yourself too seriously, everything's, you know, has to be just so, then you're shutting down the heart. And then you're wondering, why am I not inspired to do anything? Why am I not motivated to do anything? How come I have no new ideas? Why do I feel stuck? You know?
Yeah. Too serious. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is easy, you know, when we get piled on with so many responsibilities, it's very easy to just feel very serious.
This brings us to the end of part one of a two-part series with Anne Cecil Sturman on the power of intention. Now we want to hear from you. Visit acenterfornaturalhealing.com/intention and let us know the biggest insights you gleaned from this episode. Did you feel sparked by your ability to expand your consciousness? And if you haven't already joined our email list, make sure to visit acenterfornaturalhealing.com/welcome to get the exclusive insights that we only share with our email subscribers. Thank you so much for listening to the Natural Healing Podcast. We look forward to connecting with you again next time. Bye. Hey, if you haven't already done so, be sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. This ensures that we can share this invaluable information with more listeners just like you.